Hi folks, Peter here. As you know, Snow Country Stories Japan is currently on a short break, with Season 2 set to roll out in September. I'll announce the return date as soon as possible, and in the meantime, as promised, I'll republish a couple of episodes from Season 1. Today's episode is an edited version of what was Episode 2 of the podcast, Remove, Replace, Repeat, the Unending Restoration of a 200-year-old Farmhouse in Togari, Nagano. The original episode was around 60 minutes long, whereas this edit is only around 20 minutes, providing a taste of the overall conversation with my guest, Rich Morgan, about he and his wife Michael's renovation of a traditional kominka farmhouse. I thought it worth republishing an edited version of this episode, as given the length of the original, you might not have had time to get through it, and being the second episode, it was squeezed between the first and the third, which were uploaded on 3 consecutive days to launch the pod. Therefore, it only had top billing for 24 hours before the next episode rolled in. I think this shorter version captures the essence of the chat, so I hope it's of interest in itself and might also prompt you to listen to the longer original episode. In that chat, we went into a lot more detail about Togari, the snow and sense of community there, the house itself, and Mikey's business finding and renovating these beautiful old buildings for people. If you've clicked on this episode as your first of the Snow Country Stories Japan podcast, thanks for joining us, and I hope you enjoy it. Just worth repeating that this isn't a full episode. It doesn't have all the usual trimmings of my intro, outro, and an episode page on the website. Check out your podcast app for the library of episodes from Season 1, and for more information, visit the website snowcountrystories.com. And now, here's my chat with Rich.
You asked me earlier how you're doing, or how's Mikey doing, my wife, my lovely wife. And I said she's busy. But that you know, and I really hate myself for saying that, because I can't stand it. That's too strong. It irritates me slightly when you ask somebody how they're doing and they say, I'm so busy. Because it's almost like, who gives a toss about that? You know, I it's almost like holier than thou, or I'm great, or I'm so busy. And
Word I find myself using recently is hectic.
Yeah, that's good.
Where does that
chaotic
rank?
Chaotic's good as well.
Dramatic was my last week. Dramatic, because we were all sick.
Yeah. So is everyone all right now?
More or less, I think. Yeah. I'm back to the usual form, which is somewhere below subpar.
did you lose a bit of weight?
I hope so. What do you tell me?
You're looking good. Thank you. You should have food poisoning. Just try and, you know, go for it.
Sounds like Mikey's out of action today. Is she?
Yeah,
she well?
I think it's either a very heavy cold or just the Kaffun show has got too much. Yeah. It's weird. This year,
the Kaffun show being the seasonal allergies in Japan.
Particularly from the cedar trees. Which is something that also is quite annoying.
Do you get that?
No, I don't. I've heard from a doctor friend, and he's a real doctor. He's, you know, although what I'm going to say next might
This qualifier gives me no confidence, but go ahead.
Maybe he hasn't got a license, because he said that perhaps wearing contact lenses makes a big difference.
It helps, obviously.
Yeah, it helps, because I feel like this at this time of year, I can feel something in the air, you know, like maybe it's just me, maybe it's just my, but I can feel there's some kind of something going on with this, because sometimes you can actually see clouds of
absolutely.
When I
drove up here this morning, the windshield when I got in the car was just covered in that kind of yellow pollen.
That's because you live in Nagano, though.
I do. I'm currently doing a 3-year course of meds to get rid of my allergy.
Are you really?
Yeah, a tablet every day.
It seems to be working, because you don't seem
absolutely to be... It is.
Oh, brilliant!
Yeah,
that's great.
Oh, absolutely. That's why I'm happy to call myself an old man. You know, like on kind of permanently on medication now.
Right. How old are you?
44.
Oh well, I'm 48. So
all right.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. I always forget your age. You've told me on numerous occasions. In fact, when you first introduced yourself, you said, my name's Pete, and I'm 40 or something.
Yeah, that's how I go around.
Is that an Australian thing?
Possibly. I mean, I'm just happy that anyone speaks to me, you know, so excited when a conversation begins.
Yeah.
So the reason to start the podcast is to force people to talk to me.
Right. No, well, you don't need to force me to start talking. You know me.
I do know you. And just to introduce you to any listeners today, I'm speaking with Rich Morgan, a friend living up here in Togari, Nagano. Just to help Rich, for anyone who's not familiar with the area, where is Togari in relation to Nagano and the rest of Japan?
So Nagano Prefecture is right bang in the middle of Japan, and it's landlocked. I'm sure there's a number out there, but there are very few prefectures in Japan that are landlocked.
Yeah, I imagine there wouldn't be many at all.
Yeah, that's right. And it's sort of northwest of Tokyo, mm-hmm. in the Kanto region, yep. And about 4 hours by car from Tokyo on mm-hmm. the highway. Togari is in Iyama, which is a city. It's called a city, but it's not. Yeah. There's only 20,000 people here, and it's very
confusing, isn't it? It's rural. Japanese use of that word.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. They love using that. And Iyama is in the far north or northeast of Nagano Prefecture. So we're sort of an hour, as the crow flies, about an hour from the Sea of Japan. That's on the north coast of Japan. And we're about 45 minutes north of Nagano City.
Tell us a little bit about where we are today. When did you find this house? What was the process of actually purchasing it? And how did you make that decision about Togari? Were you specifically looking for Togari?
Yeah, so Togari, Nozawa, which is 10 minutes drive away, which is, it's famous, very famous ski resort and mm-hmm. an onsen town, a mm-hmm. Hot spring town. And we with a group of Japanese friends, about 20 of us, we went there 2010 New Year and had a party there and skied and it was great. It was quite a big snow year. And the following February, so this is 2011, just 1 week before the huge earthquake, the Tohoku earthquake, yeah. mm-hmm. we came back that weekend, just the two of us, and it was also still huge snow. And at that time, there was no bullet train, and it was quite tough getting there. And then,
Oh, so that's before the bullet train was extended. Yeah. Okay.
And then we heard that the bullet train was going to be opened. The Hokuriku bullet train that goes to Kanazawa on the north coast. Yep. And Mike has always been very good with research, and also she's always been really interested in property and real estate. So she was, oh yeah, maybe that's the place for the house, our goal, our dream. And
when did you find the house that we're in today? Like the house that we are now sitting in, that you're renovating, when did you
early 2016 we were shown it, and then we actually bought it in September of that year, 2016.
And was that a complicated process in terms of the purchase and negotiation to buy it?
Not really. Compared to the UK, it wasn't really any. Yeah. No, it was just, we saw in that from 2006 to getting, so 10 years really, we saw about 80 properties. Mostly Nagano, I would say a large proportion of them in Nagano Prefecture. So, to be honest, on a personal note, we found out the year before, we went through some personal things. My father passed away and the same year, it was a tough year, 2015, we found out that we couldn't have kids. So we thought, come on, because we were, over the 10 years, we looked at lots of properties and we were still thinking, what should we do? Should we go for it, buying one of these houses and moving out to the countryside, or should we stay in Saitama but then finding that out, and then my father passing away, I thought, life's too short. Let's just do it. Even if we had kids, we would have done it probably. Mm. But that was kind of the push.
Yeah.
So late 2015, early 2016, we were looking very, very hard for a house. And we got this through, Micah found it through the local government, the local council.
Yep.
We're sort of put this, we're advertising this house as for sale. We already wanted to move here.
Mm.
So we connected with them, and then they said, and we know you want to get an old Japanese house. Here's one. What do you think?
Yep.
And we had very strict criteria for what we wanted. And this pretty much, you know, ticked all the boxes.
Can you run me through those? What, like, specifically, what were you after and what were you trying to avoid?
Can't even remember now. I think, well, I wanted a view without the bloody electric
power lines. Tell me about it.
Yeah. And so that took a long time. There are, you know, others available, and they're, you know, friends of ours have got one as well. Got and other friends, you know. But, you know, that was one thing. We wanted some kind of view. And there are amazing, you know, lots of houses have great views here. It's amazing place for, you know, the beauty of the valley. We wanted a nice neighbors. So when we were looking at it, our immediate neighbor, he was walking his dog and his wife came along as well. And they were so welcoming. We've become great friends.
Yeah.
And they've been so helpful over the years. So we wanted great neighbors for, you know, that's another thing.
So my experience of that, though, is that these are small communities. And I think that for these communities, everybody is an outsider. Doesn't matter if you're Japanese or foreigner. If you're from Tokyo, you're just as much an outsider.
Oh, yeah.
True. Maybe I shouldn't say just as much, but you're an outsider. Just like the foreigner. And I think it's all about the attitude that you bring. And so if you come in with the right attitude, I think they're very accepting because they know they need people to keep these communities growing.
Right.
And so I don't think it makes a big difference. And in a way, I think because you are so novel to them.
Right.
That's them. It sounds like I'm generalizing here a lot. But you are so novel. I think that they actually, in many regards, I think that it's a more open door than it might be for Japanese to make the transition from a big city into a small community like this.
As you say, it might be a combination of they feel they need us, but also they're just nice people.
What do you know of the history of the house? Like, how old is it, and who was living here prior to you guys taking it on?
So, when we bought it, we were told it was 200 years old. So now it's about 205, whatever. So to just explain what a kominka is. So to break it down, court means old. Min means folk or people, and ka is the kanji for house. It's a nice, it's a very nice looking kanji in the Japanese Chinese alphabet. It's very beautiful looking kanji actually, as a combination, and it means old people's house. But it doesn't mean that. It means a traditional farmhouse where a large family would have lived. And this piece of land has been lived on by the same family for generations. You know, we were told something in the region of 400 years
already.
So there would have been previous incarnations of this house on this land before, which is, I find fascinating.
And I imagine the first step of any renovation of one of these old houses is just pulling everything off it. To see what the reality is.
So,
is
yeah, there's
the kind of first step.
I would say there are two kinds of these minka. I'm going to keep referring to them as minka. I hope everyone who's listening can now know what they are, these old farmhouses. There are two kinds. One is one type that hasn't really been touched and is maybe in a bit of a bad state, but just needs a good clean and is a blank canvas. And the other kind that was really, I would say, bastardized in the 60s, 70s, 80s by the families who were living in them, where they tried to modernize them. And as we know, the 70s wasn't a great time for interiors. And it was very badly done. So when we bought this, it was this area we're sitting in now was completely different. It was just very low, horrible sort of vinyl ceilings, white vinyl, you know, horrible composite material. And the floor was raised up 40 centimeters. It was a horrible fake wooden floor. And three or four separate rooms, disgusting bathroom and toilets. And, you know, this separate room idea because of heat, because it gets cold around here to save energy into. Whereas originally pre-war, it was, the first 150 years of its life, probably it was just two basic rooms, this big open room with the open ceiling, with a huge fire and a horse and a goat living in the room, and a kitchen, a very basic kitchen area.
Earthen floor,
that's right, yep. Soil floor. Yep. And then on the other side, as you look at the house, normally on the right-hand side, as you look at the house, would have been the tatami area, the sleeping area, the natural straw bedding area. And that was it, really. Yeah, the first big job was putting the bathroom in and the toilets, because we needed those. And then the second phase, 2020, I had a good friend who's also a Minka lover. He's got a beautiful Minka up the road. I unfortunately slipped the disc in my back. And, you know, country life, lifting something and not bending my knees. Yeah. So he did a huge amount of the demolition, and he's a rock star. It was brilliant. And so ripped out all of this horrible 70s kitsch kind of material and, you know, took it away. And then we were left with this basic shell. Yeah. And the walls had to be redone. Just the pillars were left and the main beams.
Yeah.
All the solid walls you can see, apart from this original, you know, we had to rebuild.
Yep.
Yeah. So it was a big project. We had a wonderful carpenter who helped us all the way, you know, throughout the whole project.
Yep. Any big surprises along the way? I imagine that would be the first step, is kind of really seeing
so many.
What's underneath. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and nothing here is in straight lines, right? So.
Oh, there are no straight lines in this house. No.
Right.
And the bedding, the sleeping area, it's quite high. It's about a 70 centimeters high sleeping area. Ours is quite high because they need the airflow, because behind us is a forest.
Yep.
So you often find these houses, they have quite a high, one side is raised, the sleeping area, to get airflow underneath. And also these to keep chickens under there as well, through the winter as well. We found a huge hole, and now we realize a lot of our friends have found them as well. There's a big hole dug into that over there, still there actually, where they stored potatoes, strangely. There are a lot of strange methods. For example, the washing up was, there's a pond behind the house where they had koi carp. When they washed their dishes, it was majority of what they ate was vegetable-based.
Yeah.
No meat, not even much fish in this area. They would just wash the dishes with water. The grey water would go into the pond, and the koi would eat the bits of food left on the plates.
Yeah,
that would come off the plates.
Yeah,
it was a brilliant system, really.
Yeah.
So, but I do wonder what's in that bed. On you know, what's the bed of that pond composed of?
Yeah. It's another example. Of just these houses really are living things in themselves. Yeah. And as you mentioned, you're sharing it. It's not just yours. There's all these other things that are reliant and living in and around the house.
Yeah.
Something which is a really wonderful thing. And one thing I like about the renovation that you're doing is that you really seem to be focused on retaining a lot of the actual character and history of the house, with the exposed earthen walls, showing things like this. I think a lot of renovations of these older houses have done very nicely, but I noticed that they seem to cut again. Maybe they cover it up a little bit better than they did in the 70s, but they often will cover up the bones of the house. And you guys seem to be leaving it very open. I really admire anyone who takes on these houses with the passion. And speaking of words, that you mentioned you don't like the people who describe themselves as busy. I think the word passion is used way too much.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
But it does take that, you know, literal passion to actually undertake these houses and restore them in the way that you're doing. So I really admire you for that. But the fact that also it extends to a broader approach to actually assisting the community and
finding
more people to come in is a fantastic thing.
Perhaps passion is the wrong word. Weirdness. yeah, that's what's required.
Yeah.
You can't be – I don't think any of us are normal. We're not like the – well, I suppose we don't like the drudgery of Tokyo life. – You know, we kind of got tired of it, and we appreciate aesthetics. I mean, we're not saying we're better than We appreciate, you know, you're not like I suppose we could be called old romantics, but we're not saying we're better than anyone who doesn't appreciate these old houses. But we like them.
Can I say one more thing?
Go for it. Well, as we sit here and talk, what one thing I've noticed about everyone, our Minka and everyone else's Minka, is is, and we mentioned all the stuff that could be below us, you know, after the family living for all those years, you know, and children visiting and the neighbors coming over centuries, literally. Isn't it amazing to think of all the conversations and dramas that have happened, you know, in this building? And that's why I really think they deserve protecting. It's not just about the building, the pillars, the trees that have been used to make them. It's about the memories, you know, and the stories. And that's what we need to cherish and protect.